What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Hot Take, where I, along with my co-host Nat Nat, give our hottest takes on all things NBA. In week three, we'll be covering certain things in our rundown, including games 1 and 2 of the Lakers and Rockets, plus games 1, 2, and 3 of the Clippers Nuggets, games 3 and 4 of the Heat Bucks, and games 3, 4, and 5 of the Celtics Raptors. Plus, we're going to give you our thoughts on those games. And at the end of every show, we give what we call our hot takes. Basically, we're giving our opinions, hottest takes on certain topics. So, Nat, let's get right into
it. Let's do it.
Let's start off with Lakers-Rockets, games 1 and 2, because this is one of those games where we had to wait, right? In the Western Conference, there was a couple game sevens. The Lakers were waiting for the Rockets. Prior to the Lakers and Rockets, let's just talk about quickly Rockets versus Thunder. Crazy game 7.
Oh, yeah, that was insane.
A little bit controversial there at the end. Who knows? I feel for Chris Paul. The Thunder had 0.2% chance of making it to the playoffs at the beginning of the season. To make it as far as they did and then to go out that way, man, it's heartbreaking.
Definitely.
Better luck to them next year. Let's see what Chris Paul does. But now on to the Rockets and Lakers. Let's start first with game 1. I mean, game 1, we all thought Lakers were going to take game 1, myself included. But what kind of happened is what happened to the Lakers in the previous round where they give up game 1.
Yes.
Right. And they gave up a lot of points in game 1. I mean, Rockets, they kind of went off on the Lakers there. Just to give you some quick stats. Field goal percentage wise, Houston outshot them 48% to 42%. 3-point wise, they shot 35 compared to the Lakers 28. Turnovers, Houston had fewer turnovers, but they also had more rebounds than the Lakers. That was game 1. What was your take from game 1?
I'll just mention very briefly the game 7 of the Thunder and Rockets.
Sure, go right
ahead. That last minute of Lou Dort getting blocked by Harden and then just bouncing it off Harden, that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have tried to throw it off or deflect off Harden. That was a bad idea.
Rookie mistake.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm sure that team will definitely learn from this and bounce back next year. They have a good, solid team. I think that they'll be able to, you know, make it past the first round next season. But anyways, game 1 in general isn't a good predictor of that whole series. I wouldn't really place that much importance on the game 1s. The game 1s usually are just not a good sense of what's to come for that series. The game 1, I saw just, you know, James Harden really going off. I think he was pretty good shooting-wise in the first half.
He ended with 36 points that game, yes.
But I think the main important thing here is LeBron setting the tone, and AD has to be more aggressive on the offensive end. The Rockets' defense, it's hard to predict what they'll do. So I think that for the Lakers, they just have to make their shots, get more offensive rebounds, and just, you know, just be better on defense.
For game 1, you basically pretty much said everything. And leading to your point, you know, with the points that you gave, we kind of discussed this in our show last week where LeBron James has this tendency where, yeah, they might lose game 1, but it's a feeling out process, right? That's what the veteran savviness of LeBron James does. He figures things out on the fly as things happen, as games go on. And to your point, in game 2, the Lakers dominated the Rockets pretty much. James Harden, he did have a pretty decent scoring night. He scored 27 points. But also to your point, what you mentioned just a few minutes ago about Anthony Davis in the first game and needing more from him, he had 25 in the first game. Second game, he had 34 points. You know, yeah. We discussed the stats from the first game. It was the complete opposite in the second game, where in the first game, Houston led in almost all the categories. Here in the second game, Lakers shot almost 57% from the floor. 57%. It was good. Rockets shot 45% from threes. The Lakers shot 45% from threes.
Crazy, man.
42% from Houston. In terms of turnovers, the Lakers had 1 fewer turnover than the Rockets did. And the Lakers out-rebounded the Rockets in game 2, which led to a game 2 victory. This is what we discussed last week. You know, LeBron being one of the all-time greats, this is what he does. He figures things out. I think their roster is a little bit thin, but he finds a way to make things work.
And like, I noticed too that in the fourth quarter, he just went off. Like, he kind of activated something.
Right.
Because in the first 3 quarters, he was doing well, but he wasn't doing as well as the fourth quarter.
Right.
So that was interesting to see. But question for you. Let's talk about real fast, Russell Westbrook. So in your eyes, what does he have to do in order for them to succeed, hopefully, in the series?
The Rockets want to be a good shooting team. But in order to be a really good shooting team, you have to have a lot of movement off the ball. It's hard to do that when you have such a ball-dominant guard in James Harden. Yes, there's movement, but I think there needs to be more of it. This will give your shooters the open floor that they need to maneuver. This gives guys like James Harden and Russell Westbrook the ability to do what they do best, which is to attack the rim.
Right.
Russell Westbrook to finish at the rim, James Harden to get to the line. That's his bread and butter, is getting to the free throw line. So I feel like Russ just needs to be a little bit more patient, play within the flow of the offense. I mean, that's like standard. I know it's a kind of a generic answer, but I feel like that's what needs to happen.
For sure. Yeah. Because he's definitely like the make or break of the series. If he's doing well, they'll have a chance. If not, then Lakers are going to just take advantage of that.
I agree. And with that, let's get into Clippers Nuggets recap and our thoughts on that. Game one, complete obliteration by the Clippers against the Nuggets. I mean, completely dismantled them.
You know what, though? I think it was just generally they were just distressed from playing that Game 7 against the Jazz.
And, you know, to that point, talking about Game 7, my heart just goes out for Spider Mitchell, man. I feel so bad for Donovan Mitchell.
He fought hard.
He left it all out on the floor. It was just heartbreaking to see. There's arguments on whether or not Mike Conley should have taken that last shot. You see Donovan Mitchell wide open, mm-hmm. wide open.
Yes.
At the top of the three, that would have sealed it for them. And just his reaction, just, I mean, you really feel for that guy.
Do you think he would have made that shot if he was past that shot?
Me personally, I feel like he would have made that shot. The way he's been playing, the intensity he's been playing with, the confidence that he had, I feel like he has the utmost confidence in his abilities. I think for sure he would have made that shot.
Agreed.
If I may, I know there's a whole thing with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. I feel like it was kind of messed up. Rudy saw, you could see his eyes. He was looking down court and he saw Donovan Mitchell.
Yes.
If he had just chucked it down court, you know, that's easy buckets right there.
Yeah.
That could have been a two-pointer, that could have been a three-pointer, what have you, instead of a contested three by Mike Conley. I also feel for Rudy Gobert because I've been in positions where you play the big man. As big man, you're taught not to make the outlet pass. You pass it to the guard.
Mm-hmm.
So that the guard could do something with it. You were saying?
No, so I was saying that Donovan Mitchell got the ball stolen, but he should have been running towards the other end of the floor because he was just laying down there just sad about what just happened. Rudy Gobert got the rebound, but he's so far away, he probably saw Mike Conley first and was like, oh, let me pass it to him first, you know?
That's a good point. That's a good point. But that's what led to the Nuggets making it into the next round where, again, we already stated they got destroyed by the Clippers. I mean, Kawhi just goes off, which he tends to do. In almost every category, the Clippers outplayed the Nuggets. And something else that we discussed in our last podcast, if you haven't listened to it, we talked about team shooting threes and three-point percentage. You made the point that the team that shoots a higher percentage will most likely win the game. I stated that the team that makes the most threes, regardless of percentage, will win the game. To a certain extent, I think both of us are right. I think the Clippers, they took more threes and they made more threes. Just to give you some numbers here, Denver shot 25% from 3-point in game one compared to the Clippers 42%.
Above 40 is good, man. That's really good.
It is. It is. If you're shooting over 40% from three as a team, that's pretty good. You're shooting a lot of them, you're definitely going to win a game. For the most part, you know, I was not going to say that's always going to be the case, but for the most part, you will win, which is what happened in game one. Moving on to game two, different story. Again, it was just like the Lakers-Rockets where the script kind of flipped. The Nuggets shot better. They went up to 36% from three-point, whereas the Clippers went way down to 28%. Paul George, he did his thing. He held his own. He's, you know, he dropped 22 points. But Jamal Murray, we talked in the last podcast, star in the making. This guy went off in game two, dropping 27 points, leading all scorers throughout the whole game. And Kawhi, he kind of struggled. He shot 4-for-17, yep. Only had 13 points in game two, which is why the Nuggets beat them by 9. Was there anything in particular you noticed or saw from game two?
Again, like last series with the Jazz and the Nuggets, I didn't really pay attention to it much. And the same goes here. So like, I didn't really pay that much attention
right
to the Denver and Clippers series. I only watched game three. I didn't watch games one and two.
So let's go right into game three, actually.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So so from game three, I just, again, Kawhi was struggling in the first half, but Denver too, like you know, they were hot for the most part, but then they got cold towards the end where it really mattered. They kept throwing it to Jeremy Grant for no reason. Like, first of all, you have Jokic and you have Murray, who are your probably two best scorers.
Right.
But for some reason, I guess Jokic was being unselfish. He wanted to make, you know, the pass to Jeremy Grant. Man, like, you really gotta, you know, take it in your own hands.
Right.
Because Jeremy Grant, like, yeah, he's okay. But then again, like, he's not as good as Murray and Jokic.
Right. He's not your top two or even three option on offense.
Exactly. Yeah. They should have put in MPJ, Michael Porter Jr., because they didn't put him in until, I think, right after Kawhi shot those last two free throws. So it's really just a matter of, you know, who's really scoring more and who's scoring better. And right, just from that game three, towards the end, the Nuggets couldn't score in those last like two or so minutes. So,
I mean, it was relatively a close game all throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, until the fourth quarter, that's when the Clippers kind of ran away with it. Up until that point, you mentioned the play of Jokic. I mean, this guy went off last, you know, yesterday.
He got
32
yeah
points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hit a couple big threes. Almost had a triple-double, actually. You were mentioning his assist. He was two assists away from a triple-double.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw it. He had this one no-look pass. I think it was to Jeremy Grant. It was just beautiful. As somebody who sometimes plays as a big man, you know, I love to see big men feeding the smaller guy. Like, it's not really a common thing. And he's one of the best to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I feel like in crunch time situations, you have to give it to your best players, namely Jokic and Murray. Murray didn't have the most stellar game yesterday.
No, he didn't.
But then you have somebody like Michael Porter Jr. coming off the bench who all of a sudden blows up for 18 points, 10 rebounds.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that you want to see in your bench. But kind of like the situation with some teams, for example, the Milwaukee Bucks, I feel like the Nuggets don't have necessarily that third option when it comes to getting points. For the Clippers, you know, you have Kawhi, you have PG, then you have guys like Lou Williams, you know, former Sixth Man of the Year. You got Montrezl Harrell, the current Sixth Man of the Year. You're going to get offense from certain guys.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the teams that don't have that clear go-to third, fourth option, those are the teams that struggle. For example, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Denver Nuggets, these teams where you don't know where the scoring is going to come from. I think that's part of the reason why yesterday the Nuggets fell apart, because you have a stellar game from Jokic, you have a decent game from Michael Porter Jr., but then Murray kind of falls off.
He had good looks from three too, but he missed quite a few of them.
You kind of live or die by the three. I know it's cliche to say, you know, commentators and analysts, they say it's a make or miss league, and it is. It's very cliche to say, but it's true. You got to hit your shots, especially in crunch time. Talking about, you know, making sure you're hitting your shots during crunch time, this kind of brings us to our next recap and the next set of games that we're going to give our thoughts on, which is the Bucks and Heat.
Yeah, your favorite.
Yeah, my favorite. I loved it. The last time we spoke, Miami was up 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
Then on September 4th, Friday, September 4th, a very special day to me. Probably one of the best birthday gifts.
Hey.
And they went up 3-0 on the number one seed in the East, the Milwaukee Bucks. And to see that, how they play, how they dominate. I was so confident going into game four that Miami was going to sweep,
mm-hmm,
right? Now, you see in game four, early on, second quarter, Milwaukee's superstar goes down, which you hate to see. It looked painful. He re-injured his right ankle. It didn't look pretty, especially for someone his size.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say the bigger you are, the harder you fall. Seven-footers weighing that much with the amount of torque and power he gets from his lower body, to suffer an injury like that, it's not pretty. You know, best wishes to Giannis.
Yep.
Speedy recovery. But, you know, I was talking to relatives and, you know, close friends, and when this happened, when Giannis went down, the first thing that came into my mind, right, people were like, oh, that's it, it's gonna be a sweep, Miami got this, they're ready up. They were even up at halftime, if I'm not mistaken. But there's times in sports history where your superstar or a key player gets injured and the teammates around that person rally around and they pull victory out.
And they did that.
And that's exactly what happened in game four. Miami was completely dominating in games 1, 2, and part of game 3. I mean, in all of game 3 and parts of game 4. But then Giannis goes down, and what happens? Chris Middleton just blows up. 36 points.
Yep.
Gets to the free throw line 9 times, makes 9 of them. You know, shoots 12 for 28 from the floor. It's moments like that in sports history where when something serious happens, guys just rally around each other and they're like, you know what? Let's do it for our fallen teammate. Let's do this. You know what I mean? What's your takes from game 4 of the Heat Bucks?
Man, well, first off, I didn't think that Milwaukee would want to be swept. I think, you know, they're going to put up a good fight as they did in game four. But first off, man, shout out to Chris Middleton. He really stepped up, especially that clutch three in overtime in front of, I forget who it was. I think it was Tyler Hero. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like your star player is down. Everyone else steps up to support what he's been going through in the sense that, like, hey, like he fell for us. We have to pick up our load now. What I kind of got from that game was that the Heat couldn't adjust to Giannis not being there anymore after he went down.
I agree.
I think their defense now was very planned around having Giannis there. And now that he wasn't there, they probably, you know, kind of slagged off a little bit. Towards the end of that game, we saw Tyler Hero step up huge in the clutch, shooting those clutch threes that brought him very close.
Baby goat right there, baby goat.
But honestly, it wasn't enough to complete the sweep. So we have to wait game 5 and see what happens. But
it was heartbreaking for me because I feel like the starters, Miami starters all around, had decent games. If I'm not mistaken, let me just double check here real quick. But I think all 5 starters were in double figures.
Mm-hmm.
They were. Bam had 26. Butler had 17. Crowder had 18. Dragic had 17. Duncan Robinson, my guy, went 50% from 3-point. 50%. He shot 6 for 12 and dropped 20 points. And Miami loses in the final overtime. And so this was kind of like a good coming out game for Duncan. And, you know, dropping 20 points but falling short by 3, you know, it was painful for me to see that. The thing with Miami, and it's always been the case for Miami, even throughout these playoffs, and the thing is they're well aware of it, is the fact that they turn the ball over so frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Milwaukee turned the ball over 12 times. Miami turned the ball over 16 times.
It's a lot.
Very rarely do you turn the ball over that much and win the game. I mean, other than that, Miami shot better from 3-pointer. They out-rebounded Milwaukee. But at the end of the day, with turnovers and overall field goal percentage, they just couldn't get it done. You know, like you said, dagger by Chris Middleton. It was a fun game. You know, I was just hoping it going into overtime. I was like, man, you know, Miami usually pulls these out. But unfortunately, they fell short. You know, they fell short in game 4. They didn't get the sweep, which I think is a relief. The other thing I took away from this game, which I really appreciate, a lot of times when you lose a game like that, when you're on the verge of sweeping and it's disappointing that your team loses, there was an interview with Jimmy Butler after the game where they were just trying to figure out what the mindset was. They saw Giannis go out. The reporter asked, you know, did you guys kind of back down a little bit, get a little bit too comfortable, you know, take your foot off the gas, so to speak, which is exactly what happened. And Jimmy Butler, being your superstar, leader of your team, he owned it. You know, he owned it. He was like, yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got too comfortable. I think as a leader and for your teammates to hear and understand that you accept that and you are fully aware of it, that kind of puts your mindset into, okay, yeah, we're going into next game. Giannis may or may not play, but we can't allow what happened tonight to happen again. So with that said, I think Jimmy kind of set the tone already, like, this is on us. Like, yeah, Milwaukee's a great team, but we kind of lost the game. That's our own doing, which is exactly what I think had happened. When they saw Giannis go down, you kind of saw it, like, you know, more turnovers. Like we mentioned earlier, who's the Bucks, you know, third scoring option? Who's it going to be? You know, they don't really have one aside from Giannis and Chris Middleton. You get scoring from bunch of other people, so we'll see what happens. My hope is that they win. What's your take? You think Miami's gonna win it tonight?
Oh, for sure.
All right, so next week we'll be talking about it. For the last game that we kind of want to cover and talk about, it's probably been the most exciting so far. I mean, again, The Western Conference, they've only played a few games, a handful of games, whereas the Eastern Conference, they've been playing already. This series between Toronto and Boston, to me, is just very exciting. You know, this is kind of what you want to see in a playoff series. It's a lot of back and forth. Celtics came out early with the 2-0 lead, and then all of a sudden, here come the Raptors. And I believe it was game three when Raptors won that game. It was a close game. They only won by 1 point. I think that's the game with...
the game winner from...
Was it Anunoby? Yeah. OG with the bucket, man. That's clutch.
That was ice cold, for sure.
You know, I was listening to other podcasts. What a pass by Kyle Lowry.
Over Taco Fall. It was great.
Over Taco Fall. Taco Fall's like 7'12", man. He made a pass over that guy. You know what I mean? As small as Kyle is, I think he's listed at like maybe like, I don't know, somewhere in the low six foot, mm-hmm. you know, 6'1", 6'2". I think he's smaller than that. I don't know. But Taco Fall is huge. To make that pass over Taco Fall and for OG to have the confidence and no fear to take that shot to hit the game winner, mm-hmm. you know, props to him. My heart goes out to Jaylen Brown because he really tried to defend that. It's, you know, from a defensive standpoint, the Celtics did everything you were supposed to do. It's just one of those things where I don't know if you want to say it's a lucky shot, but it went in. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how the Raptors took game three, kind of gave them their swagger to go into game four, in which they won. You know, it's still a relatively close game. Mm-hmm. They won by 7, 100-93. You know, what did you notice from games three and four?
From game three, first of all, that was a miracle. I was texting my friend, and like it was before that shot from Anunoby. I was like, man, this is over. They're going to go 3-0. Then, you know, bang. OG hits that three. Everyone's celebrating. And then game four, they win. On my IG story, I said a stat. And I'll say it here too. So Toronto, when they're tied 2-2, they have won four straight series. But after game five, obviously, who knows? So with games three and four, it was just crazy to me to see Boston's defense. They are extremely good at defense. In game five, we saw that Toronto Raptors just shot terribly, all credited to Boston's great defense. But it'll just be crazy to see what happens next. I mean, you know, we have two games left. The Celtics, they're looking pretty good right now. I'm scared because, you know, I picked Toronto. I think you did too. But who knows, man?
To that point, in game four, we were talking about shooting percentages. We were talking about three, make or miss league, you know, ride or die by the three. Let me just say the Toronto Raptors... Mm-hmm. They shot about 39%, just under 40% from three. The Celtics, they shot 20% from that game. They were not good from 3-point. Now, mm-hmm. game five, you know, you mentioned game five, completely different story. For game five, it was like the flip where the Raptors shot 30% from 3-point and the Celtics just barely outshot them with 32%. But I just feel like in game five, it was a complete blowout, by the way. Yeah. Complete blowout by the Celtics. Yeah. You mentioned their defense. You have length in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. You have feistiness in Marcus Smart. Kemba Walker, you know, he might give you something here and there from time to time. Daniel Theis should get a lot more credit than he deserves. Let me rephrase that. He deserves more credit. He does a lot of the things that we mentioned last week. It's just stuff that you want to see in your big man. He's not the tallest guy. He's not the strongest guy. He's not going to dunk on you or have the skill set of a Joel Embiid or the speed and agility of a Giannis Antetokounmpo. But it's the little things. The way he sets his screens, the way he rolls after he sets those screens, his ability to go after loose balls, his ability to hustle for boards, for rebounds. He's one of those workhorses. That's the type of guy you want to have on your team. He shot 5-for-5 from the floor. You know, 30 minutes, scored 15 points. It's not bad. He's not like a first, second, or third option on your offense. You know what I mean? But the other thing I liked about this game, and it was a big concern coming into the playoffs, was Kemba Walker's health. Even though he had like a poor overall shooting night, he still dropped 21 points. He still found a way. He got you 7 assists, which is what you want from your point guard. Let your scorers do all the work. Jason Tatum, he had kind of a poor shooting night. He only scored 18 points, but man, if Jason Tatum doesn't have it going, there's somebody else that will, and that's Jaylen Brown. And boy, did Jaylen Brown have it going. He dropped 27 points. And I'll just throw in another fun number there for you. Brad Wanamaker, I'll be honest with you, I'm not like a huge, huge fan. He wouldn't be probably on my 8-man roster. I wouldn't have him on there. But for him to come off the bench and give you 15 points, 15 much needed points, especially when, you know, your starters kind of struggling, you know, is good. That's what you want from your bench, somebody to give you something at least, you know. So I think it was a good overall team win for the Celtics. Like you said, defensively, they're long, they're athletic, they hustle, they're young, you know, they're hungry for it. They have nothing to lose at this point.
Also, adding to that series, in game five, Toronto, they had pretty decent shots throughout the whole game, but they just kept missing. So, like, going back to what you said, it's a very, like, make-or-miss situation. So, you know, pretty much, I guess in this series, for the most part, it's only a matter of which team is shooting better or creating better shots. And game five is telling, you know, it was mainly the Raptors struggling to hit their shots, and then just the Celtics just, you know, abusing them when they were shooting.
So, with that said, Boston is up 3-2. Do you still have the Raptors coming out?
Yes. I believe. Raptors in 7.
I am going to flip my switch. I'm going to flip my pick. I actually have the Celtics coming out. I think overall, I like what their team does. They just play with this chip on their shoulder. They have nothing to lose. They have nothing to prove. I feel like there's a little bit of pressure on the Raptors to prove, hey, you know, even without Kawhi, we're still a good team, you know. That can kind of get to you. I mean, we'll see what happens, of course, if Toronto continues to have a poor shooting night, which I doubt they will. I can see the series going 7 games, honestly.
Me too.
At the end of the day, I have Celtics coming out on top.
But man, it would be fascinating to see Boston and Miami in the conference finals.
It would be a good matchup. I think it would be a really good matchup. I mean, we'll see what happens if the Celtics do make it, and we'll see if Miami makes it. I mean, right now it's only a 4-point game with, you know, just about 2 minutes left. Like, all of a sudden, Milwaukee doing it in the fourth quarter, coming out of nowhere. I mean, these guys are kind of giving me a little bit of a scare here. Talking about Kemba being cardiac kid, like, I'm about to have cardiac arrest. Bro. Like, I don't know what's going on here. Come on, Miami.
Nah, you'll be fine.
Come on, Jimmy, take over. Take over, please.
Tyler Hero, come through.
Seriously, come on, baby, go. He got 14 points right now. He's doing all right. 14 points off the bench. I'll take that. Give me a little bit more. I need a little bit more from my guy, Duncan. Duncan's got to do something for me. He only has 2 points right now. I wish we had those 20 points from last game. So you have the Raptors coming out.
Yes.
I have the Celtics coming out. We'll see what happens. Check in with us next week to see who was right, who was wrong. Now, of course, before we end the show, we're going to do our hot takes.
Let's do it.
Hot takes. Hot take number one. Is this LeBron James' last chance at a championship?
I mean, you know, for one, obviously, wait, is AD just 1 year or 2 years? I forgot what his contract was. Do you remember?
I believe his is a 1 year.
So, I mean, if he's only 1 year at the Lakers and they don't make the finals or even win, who knows where AD will land. But in terms of LeBron's last chances, I believe that this is his last chance. Aside from him, you know, and like what he's doing, the league itself is progressing to just higher standards, higher level of play. You know, we've got stars rising like Luka Doncic, Jamal Murray, you know, Spider Mitchell. You know, it's going to be harder for him to get a championship as the years go by, with him getting older and with just more talent coming up. So that's my take.
My take on LeBron's last chance. I do believe this is the last year he can do something with it, with the roster that he has. I know it sucks them not having Avery Bradley there right now. Mm-hmm. Going into next season, there's a couple of things you have to take into account. One would be Anthony Davis's contract. Number two is, you know, free agency. What's the roster going to look like next year for the Lakers? They're kind of thin. We mentioned it. You know, they don't really run deep. They have a lot of big names on the roster, but that's just it. It's a roster. The thing that kind of stands out to me is where LeBron, the conference in which LeBron is playing. He's playing in the Western Conference. We've seen the emergence of a lot of young talent coming out of the West. We've seen teams do things that were unexpected. For example, you know, Thunder having a 0.2 chance of making it to the playoffs, yet there they were.
Yeah.
So I would say potentially next year, you're going to have a healthy Warriors team who's hungry to prove people wrong, who could possibly have a top draft pick, somebody that can help their team, or they could take that pick, trade it, and get veteran players to bolster up that roster because they're already deep as it is. So to have everybody back and healthy, the Warriors are going to be a threat. We talked about Luka and the Mavericks and what they're able to do with that roster. We talked about Jamal Murray and the Denver Nuggets and what they're able to do, and they have a nice young core. Don't forget the Trailblazers, who took away game one from the Lakers but aren't at full strength and aren't all that healthy. Talking about Blazers, let's not forget about the Suns.
Yes.
D-Book and the Suns to end the season on an 8-0 run, barely missing the playoffs. You know, who knows what's going to happen with them next year? On paper, they have a nasty roster. They were missing a lot of guys in the bubble. A lot of guys that, you know, for their own reasons, decided not to come. But they have a lot of nice young talent on that team. Who knows what they can do next year? I think they're going to be nasty next year. They're going to be my sleeper pick. You have Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies. Who knows what they're going to do next year? Mm-hmm. You have Zion. I imagine having a healthy Zion, Lonzo Ball in the right mind, or whatever else they can do with that roster. The West is kind of scary, man. I don't know if this Lakers roster would be able to hold up.
You're also forgetting one key detail.
What's that?
And that's in the East.
Oh.
In Brooklyn, New York, we got KD and Kyrie with the new hire coach, Steve Nash.
Unbelievable.
So again, yep. Like if the Lakers manage to fight that next year, to battle KD and Kyrie on the other side.
Right.
I don't know, man.
Right. It's now or never. It would be nice. I mean, of course, me being a Heat fan, I want the Heat to win. But in honor and remembrance of Kobe, if the Lakers pull it off, mm-hmm. Hey, you know, I wouldn't mind.
Same here. Yeah.
So let's move on to the next hot take. We saw a big game from PG last night. Is PG back?
I think he's back. He was very consistent in last night's game, you know, and I think it's all about, like you said, with mental health and being in the bubble. You know, now that he's let that out, he's now become adjusted. He's made adjustments, been more honest with himself. So I think now his game's, you know, been a lot more clearer now that he's been able to let out that feeling of, you know, being in the bubble. And it's also Paul George's mindset where, hey, if Kawhi is struggling, I have to pick it up. And I think he's been doing that pretty well. But, you know, we'll see.
Talking about consistency, I agree. I think he's been playing a lot more consistent. You're not going to need 30-plus points from PG every night. You have Kawhi. You have a nice, deep team. You know, you can get scoring from Lou Will, Montrezl Harrell, other guys from their bench. I think what he's at right now, honestly, last night, the way he played, I was like, man, this is like all-star caliber Paul George. You know, he looked like Paul George of old. Mm-hmm. I hope he keeps it up. You know, I hope he continues to perform at a high level. I think he will. He has that confidence again. And of course, when you have a team like that behind you, you don't really have anything to worry about, whether you have 17 points one night or if you have, you know, 27 the next night. You know, mm-hmm. He's going to do his thing.
Yeah.
He's going to give you points one way or another. So second to last hot take, if Bucks lose this series to Miami and they underperform next season, 2021 season, do you think Giannis will stay in Milwaukee or does he leave?
I think he will stay, honestly. I remember a quote not too long ago from him. I think he, you know, didn't really like how players would move from team to team to acquire a championship. So, you know, I can see the point of, hey, like he might go or he might stay. But my take is that he's going to stay and try to win a chip for them.
I think it can go. Of course, it's going to go one of two ways. Either he stays or he leaves. But it could also be the way in which he leaves, whether Milwaukee decides to trade him and get something in return if they have a feeling that he's going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I feel like nowadays you really don't know. You know, who would have thought 10 years ago LeBron was going to leave Cleveland to go play with a super team in Miami? It was unheard of at the time.
Yeah.
But since then, you know, things have changed. You have LeBron going to Miami, LeBron leaving Miami to go back to Cleveland, LeBron leaving Cleveland to go play for LA. You have KD leaving OKC to go play with the rival Warriors. God. And then now to leave the Warriors to go play with his buddies in Brooklyn. You know what I mean? Like, it's completely up in the air. I feel like at times Giannis is hard to read because he's, for the most part, he's fun, he's goofy, but he's also very reserved. Coming from Africa, being raised in Greece, and being exposed to being a professional at such a young age, it's hard to gauge what he's going to do. I feel like personally, from what I see and how hard he works, he would want to stay in Milwaukee.
There we go.
that's just my personal take. You know, who knows what he's really thinking. Of course, being a Miami Heat fan, I would love for him to come to Miami. There's no tax in Miami. You can make all the money you want.
You wouldn't mind.
Staying in Milwaukee, he's going to make a lot of money, but you go to Miami, that's a lot of money in your pocket.
And like, I'm sure that he sees all of this, like Giannis to the Warriors or Giannis to Miami talk, and he's like, nah, like, I'm not going to do that, you know?
I heard talks of him possibly going to the Warriors, which if he goes to the Warriors, that's a complete, you know, super team. But at the same time, it's kind of hard. It's like what KD went through. When you get to the Warriors, that's not your team. That's Steph's team. If Giannis goes there, you heard Richard Jefferson say it earlier this week where Giannis is not Michael Jordan. He's a Scottie Pippen. You know, he needs a Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best place to get one is if you go to Golden State. But is that what he wants? You know, does he want to be a Scottie Pippen, or does he want to be, you know, this is my team, I could do it, let me prove you wrong.
Yeah.
And stay in Milwaukee. I heard earlier today listening to the Podfather, a.k.a. Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo. Shout out to them. I highly doubt they'll ever hear this, but they were talking about even the possibility, you know, jokingly, if Miami were to make a trade for his brothers, the one from L.A., the one from Milwaukee.
Yeah.
If they made a trade to, you know, get them in Miami, maybe it's enticing, get the Antetokounmpo brothers, you know, all on the same team. That'd be kind of nasty, you know. We'll see what happens. But I kind of like our Miami roster right now. I wouldn't want to mess with it too much. You know, I kind of like what we have going on. So, I mean, you know, we'll see. With that said, Nat, it's been a pleasure for everyone else that's listening. That's it. All right. See you next week, bro.
Hey guys, Nat here. And no, I did not leave him hanging. All right, I said goodbye after we stopped recording. Anyways, I'm currently in post-production of the episode. I'm almost done. But before I go, I just wanted to say to please follow us on social media, whether it's Twitter or Instagram, the same handle. It's at Fuse Podcasts. That's at P-H-U-Z-E Podcasts. We are both very thankful for your support. We'll see you guys next week.